This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. The Audubon Society's Christmas bird count began on Christmas Day in the year 1900. Throughout the 1800s, many people took part in the tradition of Christmas side hunts, during which they competed at how many birds they could kill. Then an ornithologist named Frank Chapman, who founded Bird Lore, which later became Audubon Magazine, proposed counting birds on Christmas instead of killing them. And it's been happening ever since, and is the world's longest-running citizen science effort. The annual bird count existed long before the term citizen science ever did. During the annual count, bird watchers walk around designated circular areas and count the type and number of birds they see and hear over the course of the day. The information they collect is used to track bird populations in North and South America and how they have changed over time. The Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary's Christmas bird count covers the sanctuary and its surroundings. They'll have 14 teams divided up around the count area, which includes a diverse array of habitats and neighborhoods. This year, it's happening this coming Saturday, December 20th, and there is still time to get involved if you're interested. To learn more, I spoke last week with the sanctuary director. Keith Lockenin is director of Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. Welcome back to the show, Keith.
Thank you so much, Mike. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I look back, we talked to you a few weeks after you started out there as director. It was the beginning of 2023, so you're coming up on your three-year anniversary. How's it been going so far?
It's been great. It's been busy. There's just so much going on out here. We are in the middle of a capital campaign. We're working with the Water Management District on modeling some hydrologic restoration, and our team is doing prescribed fire, and visitors are visiting the boardwalk every day. You know, people are seeing great things out on the boardwalk. And, you know, Christmas bird count season's coming up for us. So it's a great time of year. We have all our winter snowbirds, like the gray catbirds and everything, which are down on the boardwalk. Our painted buntings are back. So it's a fantastic time of the year to go look at birds, especially at Corkscrew.
So do you remember the first time you heard, not the specific first time, but how far back does knowledge of the Christmas bird count go for you? Because I know you grew up being interested in the outdoors. Have you known about it for a long time?
Yeah, I've known about the Christmas bird count my whole life. I did not become a birder until the middle of my career. I think it was about 2009, 2010. And then I sort of tripped upon birding when I was working for Fort Myers Beach. I was doing shorebird stuff, and I thought I would decide to learn shorebirds. And then from there, it just gets really addictive. And next thing I know, I signed up for one Christmas bird count. And then one year, I think I was on four of them, helping out in different places. And so it's just really fun to, you know, use my birding skills. And I'm a very avid birder to be able to contribute to the citizen science project that's been going for over 100 years now.
Yeah, it started in 1900. And I looked it up because we take that term citizen science for granted these days, but it's really a modern term. Like, this thing was going on for, 89 years before the word citizen science was used to describe what it had been doing all that time.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat, it's probably the best example we have of that. Because of that citizen science, people have been documenting, you know, in some of these circles for a really, really long time. And, you know, this Christmas bird count, it's kind of an index. So, you know, I heard somebody call it a census. It's impossible to count every single bird in a circle. It's just, you can't do it. But at least it gives you an idea from year to year. And so you look at these trends, you know, over time, and it gives you an idea how these species are doing, you know, over the length of any CBC count, you know, so that's what's really valuable. And now we had this, you know, term citizen science come around, and we have these modern tools such as eBird and iNaturalist. And so anyone can just pick up their cell phone and report a sighting of animals, which is really important. And you have this massive database, which just gets bigger all the time. So it's not just a few scientists doing monitoring here and there. It's citizens really contributing to the science that helps us understand these species.
I love trying to imagine scientists, you know, back or, you know, conservationists back when this first got started, being able to know that someday in the future that it would be as robust as it is, and we would have these kinds of tools. It's really neat to think about.
Yeah, it really is. And it would be neat to be back then and, you know, have an idea. It's like, okay, 125 years from now, people are still going to be doing the same thing in the same place.
Yeah.
And it's a family tradition for, you know, lots of families and lots of birders. You know, there's Christmas bird count groups, which get together, you know, every year. And, you know, that's been going on for over 100 years. So I think it's a really neat piece of American tradition.
So you've used the term circle a few times. For the listeners now that don't understand what you mean by that, explain in simple terms how a count works, and then we'll talk about what's going to be happening with you guys.
Yeah. So Christmas bird count starts with a circle, and somebody decides to put a pin on a map at a certain spot. Here, they put a map, a pin right in the middle of this corkscrew, and they draw a radius around that. And then they break that up into different areas, and they have different team do those surveys in different areas. And so you can have, for example, if you do it on the coast, you might have one team that's doing the beach, another team that's doing the back bay. You know, in our circle here, we have teams that are, you know, in the sanctuary doing surveys, but also in Golden Gate Estates, because that's part of the survey count. And so that, you know, that gives you an idea. You have these areas which are, you know, completely undisturbed over time, such as the swamp, but you have these other areas which are changing pretty rapidly, which is Golden Gate Estates. And so within that circle, you try to count as much as you possibly can in the same day. And then you try to use the same teams every year to survey the same places. So you repeat that methodology year after year, so you can have numbers that you can actually compare one to each other.
Explain in straightforward terms for a radio listener how counting works. Do you stay in one place? Do you walk around the region that you're in? Like, explain that part of it.
So a count usually involves some kind of route. So let's say you wanted to do a count in your neighborhood, let's say in one block area. You know, so what you're going to do is you're basically going to walk up and down those streets. But if you know there's a certain spot where a lot of birds come in, like, for example, my house, where I have lots of feeders and I have lots of painted buntings, you know, you might stop there for a little bit longer to do a count. And then you kind of move on down the street and try to pick up as many as possible. And sometimes it's really simple. You can count, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 black vultures. You know, and then there's other times where, you know, there's hundreds of vultures. And I remember doing one count we did by boat. It was a 10,000 islands count. There was a group of sandpipers. And there were so many sandpipers that, you know, they were all Western sandpipers. And so I'm looking at them. And one of the birders who'd been doing this a long time, he turns around and he goes, "I got 1,352. Is that what you guys got?" I said, "Of course we got that, Adam." So some people are really good at those numbers, you know, and, you know, some people count them by ones, you know, some people learn to count them by fives and tens. So in a flock of 3,000, sometimes you get somebody who counts every single bird, you know, but you try to count as many as possible, knowing that you could count everything right now. And then you could get a wind shift and everything comes back later in the day. So you just try to repeat it as much as possible. And really that's going to give you the trends of, you know, the species which you're going to be more accustomed to seeing or hearing in a particular circle.
You said hearing. Hearing is part of the count, right? It's not just visual, it's also audible.
Absolutely. So, of course, you know, one of the birds that you really need to hear is going to be your owl species. So there are some Christmas bird count folks who actually will start at 12:01 a.m. And they will, you know, in some areas where there's a lot of owls. And so they will go around and they'll run a route, you know, before the sun comes up to count as many calling owls as they can. And so that's one way to do it. And then, you know, during the day as a birder, you know, if you're, for example, you're on a boardwalk, you know, you're walking along and say, "Oh, I heard a gray catbird over there." You know, so you don't have to see it as long as you know what it was. But, you know, to get out there before sunrise and you hear a great horned owl hooting, you know, it's just one of those really cool things. And it's kind of a surreal sound, and it just really sounds like nature. So, yeah. So hearing a bird is just as good as seeing a bird.
And it counts for the count.
It counts for the count. Absolutely.
So people listening who might think this sounds great, but I don't know if I would be able to tell one owl from another, talk about how I think that there's an effort to partner people who may be beginners with advanced people, or how does that all work?
Yes. So you can reach out to any one of the local Christmas bird count circles, and you can go on Audubon Christmas bird count. You can look on their webpage. There's, for example, there's circles at Corkscrew. There's one in Naples, 10,000 Islands. There's one at Panther Refuge, Estero Bay, the Sanibel Captiva. One is always a big one. And so people can join that. And the person who's running the count will try to mix up people who have different experience levels. And I remember my first CVC, I was such a new birder. And I got to hang out with some birders who knew a lot more than me. And it was such a blast and so much fun, you know. And then I joined those folks a few years later, and I was getting stuff that they weren't getting. And they were like, okay, wow, you know, you've gotten better at it. And I was like, yeah. So, you know, I'm going to do a couple survey routes, and I'll be taking some folks with me who are newer birders and aren't as into it, or maybe haven't dedicated as much crazy time as I have. And so they get to, it's a learning experience. And that's what is wonderful about the South of Florida birding community is, you know, people really want to help each other get better, to identify birds and to help them understand what they're seeing in the wild. So even if you only know a cardinal or a blue jay, but you want to get involved, you can absolutely join a Christmas bird count, and they're going to connect you with somebody who knows probably more than you, and you're going to learn from, and it's going to be a fun day.
And there is a really great map that we'll link on the web post for this show that shows where all the circles are here in Southwest Florida, really all of the ones in like the Western Hemisphere, because this is a bigger than just Southwest Florida thing. And it was interesting because like you guys are there, it shows your circle, but then there's others in this area that appear to just be individuals who are, you know, have done whatever it takes to get, you know, certified to be a circle host or something.
Yeah, yeah. Those folks are called compilers.
Compilers.
I used to be a compiler for the Naples Christmas Bird Count. I was doing this when I worked full time. It turns out it's a lot of work. You have to coordinate all these teams. You have to get all the data in. You have to QA, QC the data. If somebody sees a rare bird, you know, they have to, you know, have to make sure that, okay, did you actually really see a lease tern during Christmas Bird Count? You probably didn't, because they're not here yet. So you have to do those things. And then the compilers get all this data and they enter it in. And so, yeah, so the compiler, you know, it's a really important job. And these are, most of the time, these are volunteers. And like you said, this is a person who just wants to count an area. And that's how most of these Christmas bird counts started, is somebody was saying, hey, nobody's surveying this. And so they start that survey, and those surveys may have been going on for, you know, decades now, because one person got really motivated. And you know, that's the great thing about this. We actually have a relatively new circle in the area, the Orange River Circle. And that's one that has only been on the books for a few years. So, yeah. So, you know, if somebody wants to establish a new Christmas bird count circle, they, you know, reach out to Audubon, tell them where you're going to do it. You know, but then you got to run the whole thing, which can be an adventure.
What kinds of birds, let's hone back in on the corkscrew count. What kinds of birds this time of year, you know, break it down from like what people will definitely see, what people might see, and maybe like what you would think of as an outlier, but a possibility this time of the year.
Sure. So birds you're definitely going to see this time of year, you know, our snowbirds are back, our real snowbirds, you know, our gray catbirds, our black and white warblers, our hairy woodpeckers are back, you know, so those are birds, you know, that are back for the winter. So those are likely. You're also going to realize that there's more red-bellied woodpeckers out there than you ever probably counted, because now you're counting every single one. So that's one probably everybody's going to see. So that's pretty much a standard bird. You also, you know, this time of year, you know, as we know, we haven't gotten a lot of rain this fall. So as the water starts dropping, we start to see more wading birds. So you see wading birds in some of these wetlands that are drying down. You'll see them in ditches alongside the road and some canals. So those would be some things that would be really interesting. And then, you know, somebody's always trying to find something rare in a Christmas bird count. You know, there have been some wild sightings over the years in a Christmas bird count. There was a species called a large-billed tern that was in Collier County for a significant amount of time a couple of years ago. And there was a certain pigeon out on Sanibel a couple of years ago. So all those things would be super neat to capture in a Christmas bird count. And then sometimes you might capture a bird in a CBC for the first time. because maybe its range is expanding. Maybe they're moving into the area. 100 years ago, if you had done a Christmas bird count in Southwest Florida, black-bellied whistling ducks were probably not very numerous. That's a number that's increased over time. So it all depends on where you go. And we're even going to count Muscovy ducks in your stormwater ponds, because that's still a bird and we're going to count it. And even species like common grackle, you know, there's little you know, black and brown birds that you see all over the place. Their numbers have dropped over time. And so seeing, you know, those are common things. And then, of course, at the coast, there's lots of terns and gulls and, you know, sandpipers. So it all depends on where you are. And it's always a good idea to kind of bone up on what might be in the area at the time. And you can always look on your eBird sightings to see kind of what's in the area so that your mental, you know, target list is prepared for what species you may see.
The Muscovy ducks get the short end of the stick.
I grew up in Cape Coral. Yeah. I can attest to that because I remember being a kid. It was like, look how cute that duckling is. And then they're not anymore.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned, what's the name of the bird count app? Like, you know, not just during the bird count, but year round. It's bird something?
Yes, it's an app called eBird.
eBird, that's what it is.
Yes, and so eBird is something that anybody can use. You can sign up for it, and you can enter in, you know, where you saw a bird, when, how many. It can take your track. You know, for instance, when I'd go take my boat out in 10,000 Islands, I would always have eBird running. Even for fishing, I'm birding at the same time. So it'll track where you're doing, and it will help you keep your life list together, which is, you know, for birders, we tend to love that life list. And then there's a neat partner to eBird. It's called Merlin. And Merlin is a free app. And Merlin is one of the most amazing apps that you can get. It can identify bird calls. And so you can be standing somewhere and hear a bird singing and hold this app up, and it can identify that bird. And there's still some errors in it because, you know, it's machine learning and still not perfect, you know. But for example, I heard a call this year that was, I didn't recognize it. And I held it up and it was a Kentucky warbler. That was exciting because I hadn't heard that call before with that. Merlin, you can also take a picture of a bird. It can identify the picture. So, you know, you can use Merlin. You heard something. What was that? What was that call? That was a Kentucky warbler. Great. Now I can put in eBird, and you can even attach the recording down the road. So just the technology these days is just so much more advanced, and it gives everybody an opportunity to get into birding.
You know, I asked you about eBird because I wanted to follow up with a question about whether using audio to identify bird calls and video or pictures was a thing yet. And then you said it before I even asked.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable that I've you know, had it running in my pocket before it and not really paid attention. And then, you know, I was out birding somewhere and I forgot it was running. I looked in my pocket and I said, oh, there's number tanager that I didn't, you know, so that's a bird I'm going to go ahead and flag and pay more attention listening for next time. So yeah, so technology's come a long way, and it can ID the sounds, it can identify the pictures, you know. But if it gives you, it's without something that, you know, for example, it told me once I heard a green jay in Southwest Florida. No, you didn't. So you have to kind of filter it with, you know, what may actually be there, because it's not a perfect technology, but it's really darn good.
That's pretty cool. It's like Shazam for bird sounds.
Yes, that's a great metaphor. That's perfect.
So this data, the bird count, the eBird, all that stuff, this is helping biologists understand trends in population and where they are, as you alluded to. We can't spend too much time on this, but big picture, bird populations are way down from where they would have been 50 or 100 years ago, right?
Yeah. We've lost, you know, 3 billion birds, you know, in North America.
3 billion.
And it's we call it at Audubon the bird curve. And we're really trying to bend it. And, you know, things like the Christmas bird count help us point to actual trends. You know, before our call, I went in and I looked at some data, and there was one species that popped out to me, northern bobwhite. That's what everyone calls a quail. Their numbers have dropped off precipitously, especially in South of Florida and all of Florida, because they like open areas. They like, you know, they love these old cattle fields. They even like ag areas. But as those areas are converted to subdivisions, you're losing that habitat. So those populations are dropping, you know, so it helps us, to identify, you know, and eventually, you know, that might be something that FWC wants to take a look at is like, okay, how are these species doing? Because it seems like they're doing not great because we have all this data that's showing us that things are trending.
I have to ask, I would be remiss if I didn't ask, are there wood storks out there this year?
We have seen wood storks out here feeding. Actually, one of our biologists did our first flight today, and they were flying a couple locations in Collier County and one in Lee County, one in the Clusatchee River. We are all anxiously waiting to hear how those went out. We haven't seen any activity here at Corkscrew this year, and we can pretty much attribute that to the rainfall conditions. We had it started a very dry year, and then it got normal in the summer. And then the last part of the summer, it stopped raining. And at one point, it's like the switch went off. And if that water starts dropping too fast, wood storks are probably not going to nest because they know by time that they are ready to start setting up their nest, the fish resource is going to be really low. And then every wood stork, you know, if they already have a chick, they're going to have to make a terrible decision. You know, can I do this or should I survive myself for a future year? So they may not nest this year at Corkscrew, but hopefully there'll be other areas in South Florida that did better on rainfall that they will nest in.
Is there a chance that somebody might see a wood stork on December 20th when the count happens there?
Somebody might, yeah. There's definitely, there's actually a field as you, it's on the Mockley Road as you're turning into Corkscrew. There's this wet field. It's a farmer's field across the way. And I've seen wood storks in there nearly every day for, you know, a couple of months, you know, but if you're on one of these CBCs and you're near water or a canal, you know, chances are, you know, are pretty good. You know, you might see a wood stork. And then also keep your eyes up in the air because they fly long distances and they'll sometimes hang out with vultures in these kettles way up in the air. So, you know, that's a nice thing about a CBC. You're not only looking down, but you're looking up in the air too.
And did I get the date right? Your guys' count is next Saturday the 20th, right?
Saturday the 20th. You can reach out to us if you'd like to participate in that. I know there's a couple routes we need filling. If you can't make it out here, reach out to one of the other Christmas bird counts. We'd love to have anyone get involved. It's really something that gives back to conservation, and it's a fun way to spend the day.
Cool. Well, we'll have links to that information on our website as well. Keith Lockinen is director of Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. Great talking with you again, Keith.
All right. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Have a great one and good birding.
To find a link to the map that shows where all the local official Christmas bird count circles are located and how to contact the people who are running them, just go to our website, wgcu.org/GCL. You can also find information about connecting with the folks at Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary to participate in their count. Our show today was produced by yours truly with technical support from Emma Rodriguez. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM. We are NPR for Southwest Florida.